Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 194, maybe episode 195 of your favourite Formula One show. Yes, Jamie and I return this weekend to discuss all of the action from the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, and because we haven't got enough time, we're also doing our kind of Singapore preview show. So I apologise if things change before Singapore, but yeah, we've kind of had to combine two into one. And that's because Jamie183, he's growing up in the world, he's becoming an adult. He's, you know, making moves, and he's got a life, and he just gets quite busy now, which is sad, but good for him, I guess. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm good. I fresh off the back of a weekend trip to Geneva. And
Geneva?
Got another. Well, I heard Matt was coming to Manchester, so I thought I'd leave the country. And then I'm going on a weekend trip to the Yorkshire Dales this week, so it's lovely. Yeah, it's all going well.
Do you ever actually spend any time at home?
Barely any. Yeah, people are going to be wondering. You know that tax thing where you've got to spend 90 days in your residence to.
Are you seriously going to try like and claim that you're some high net worth tax loop dodging?
I barely even pay tax. All right, let's get off that topic. Yeah, I'm doing well. Baku at the weekend. Yeah, fun race, good race. If you haven't seen it, then what are you doing watching this? Go watch the highlights.
I would genuinely love to know whether there's anyone on this earth that uses our podcast exclusively as their way of keeping up with Formula One. If you are that person, please do let us know down in the comments
below. And I wonder what some of their big misconceptions are about Formula One based on what we say versus real life. I probably think like Esteban Ocon is like a criminal.
Well, I was going to say they've probably got a very dim view of France, depending on what they've heard from us. But of course, obviously as well, quickly, I've got to remind you all, get yourself subscribed if you're not already. We are slowly but surely creeping up towards 1k subs as well on the YouTube channel. So a massive thank you to everyone for the continued support as well. Obviously, we've absolutely smashed Jamie183 into the weeds, and now, yeah, we continue on our march towards 1K. I would love to try and hit 1K by the end of the year. I think it's going to be quite close, though, depending on how we get on.
Well, tell your friends.
Tell your friends, exactly. Tell your friends, tell your family, get the dog subbed, all that good stuff. But yeah, as we came, obviously, into Baku, Jamie, we kind of were expecting this one to be a little bit wide open, weren't we? But it's one that's always very difficult to predict.
It is. And it's a weird one for the drivers because I don't want to be rude and disrespectful, but it doesn't necessarily suit the best drivers on the grid, I found. Because you look at the winners and Hamilton's only ever won one race there. Verstappen's only ever won one race there. Should have been two, but we you know.
Well, you can make the same claim for Hamilton.
You can, yeah. Arguably, it should have been one for Hamilton, but not the one he actually did win.
Well, yeah, you could also make that claim.
Yeah, so, and like, yeah, some drivers just go well there, some drivers just don't, and it's very much a confidence thing, I think. Look at Charles Leclerc, he got his first points there. He's basically always been fast there every single year. And then some drivers, like my guy Nico Hülkenberg, he just for some reason cannot hook a weekend together at Baku to save his life. So yeah, it's a strange one.
It is a very, very peculiar circuit. And of course, probably the king of Baku has probably got to be Sergio Perez, isn't it, heading into this
weekend?
Yeah,
Perez or Leclerc, isn't it?
Well, Perez is, I think
not. Leclerc's never won there, has he?
Well, Leclerc's never won there prior to this weekend. Perez has had like five podiums here or something mad. Which he's always had a decent enough car, but still to be able to hit it that well is pretty good going. But obviously you mentioned Charles Leclerc. He was the first kind of bit of drama of the weekend, wasn't he? Because it didn't take him long in FP1 before he basically did the Kimi Antonelli. He went top of the board and then stacked it, which was pretty much exactly what you'd expect from Charles Leclerc at a track like this.
At Baku, the famous I am stupid line coming out in qualifying in 2019, didn't it? So yeah, that's 5 years ago now. My word.
Alarming, isn't it?
Yeah, classic. You always get these kind of things in practice. To be honest, you also get them in qualifying, but we didn't get them too much this time. There was one year, I think 22, I want to say.
Yeah,
with five red flags.
It was in just qualifying. Chaos, wasn't it?
Yeah. But another two drivers putting their cars in the wall, both of the most inexperienced drivers on the grid in their second Grand Prix each. Am I making that up? Maybe
yeah,
third,
no, you're bang on. You're bang on.
No, yeah, second each. Behrman and Colapinto both finding a barrier in practice. But it was not too bad. Colapinto's was worse than Behrman's, wasn't it? But yeah, they lived to tell the tale. So, you know, could have been a lot worse. And you're better off doing that in practice than in the Grand Prix, aren't you? So.
Well, exactly. Exactly. You've got to try and find the limit at some point during the weekend. And, well, if you're going to go over that limit, try and do it on Friday rather than Sunday. And a team that were seemingly right on their limit as well was Mercedes, wasn't it? Because they, as seems to be tradition, it feels like ever since the ground effect regs came in, Mercedes or whatever, I don't know what they do on a Friday, why they're so good, and then suddenly just fall apart as we get to Saturday. Because once again, you know, we kind of obviously saw those three wins before the summer break, and they've kind of, you know, they've admitted themselves, they've kind of taken a step backwards again. But it kind of felt like Baku could have kick-started a resurgence once more of at least being in the fight for wins. But by the time we got to Saturday afternoon, it completely dissipated, hadn't it? The same can be said for Lando Norris's world championship hopes by the end of Q1.
Yeah, that was quite amusing to read when it happened, that Norris just didn't put a great lap together in his first run, and then second run got... It wasn't a perfect lap, but it was easily good enough to get him through, and then he got caught out by a yellow flag from Esteban Ocon, who was driving awfully slowly, not just because he's driving Alpine.
Or because
he had
he's
some
Esteban
sort
Ocon.
Of issue.
He got a puncture, I believe.
He had a puncture and was bringing the car back in very slowly. They put a yellow flag out just as Norris is going past, and then basically removed the yellow flag because they realised he wasn't a stopped car, he was just a slow-moving car. So I think they changed it to a white flag, didn't they? Which is ironic. So Norris couldn't improve. Was basically the only one who got screwed by the yellows. And was out in 17th, which was a clever ploy to try and boost his positions gained on lap one stat, because you can't lose many positions when you start in 17th. Well, it was 16th in the end, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
With a DSQ for good measure for the other Alpine, because, you know, why wouldn't they just get disqualified from a qualifying session?
Exactly. It's just what Alpine do, isn't it? But yeah, he was joined by Ricciardo, of course, his former teammate. Obviously, there's rumours that Ricciardo might be dropped come the end of the year. Obviously, yeah, Esteban Ocon and, you know, without fail, both those Sauber cars as well. Although, Zhou Guanyu, I was re-watching Q1 to do the notes today. I did think he ended up 1.8 seconds behind Bottas in qualifying, but he did improve at the end of the session to go just 0.7 away. Which is pretty good going by Zhou's standards this year. I don't think I know a driver this year that has done as many kind of what seeming... I don't believe it can consistently happen this much where it's, you know, a conscious choice each time. But it feels like Zhou every single weekend pretty much bails out of his runs in qualifying and ends up like 0.8 away. But it's still because it's the Sauber, it's only like 2 positions behind Valtteri.
I don't know. It feels like he knows he's on his way out, doesn't he? So he's doing as best he can, but, you know, the car doesn't really inspire confidence. That is a shame.
It really is. What wasn't a shame, though, well, at least for me anyway, and I'm sure Jamie will have his excuses lined up, was Q2. Ollie Behrman out-qualified Nico Hülkenberg in their very first race together, and probably only ever race together as Haas teammates.
I did say in the preview show, didn't I, that I thought this would happen. So I'll take that as a win for me, because it is Hulk's worst track, I would say, by a considerable margin.
It's got to be right up there for him, hasn't it?
Behrman did a good job and was actually frustrated not to get into Q3 himself, wasn't he? But Hulk just didn't get together on his last lap. All through quality up to that point, Hulk was faster, but then, didn't get it together in Q2. It is a bit irrelevant, but I'm going to say it anyway. Obviously, both Williams making it to Q3 was pretty impressive, especially for old Franco, who very suddenly is becoming like a fan favourite, it feels like. We'll get on to a bit more later, I'm sure. But Colapinto, I'm almost sad that he's not going to be on the grid next year. And 2 races ago, I barely knew who he was.
Yeah, it is kind of mad. I think, to be honest, and like we said, we'll talk about this a bit more as we go later on in the show. But it's one of those things, isn't it, now, where we're at this weird kind of learning period again, where everyone kind of realised that it was such a big risk with the budget cap bringing in junior drivers. And now it kind of feels like it's gone the other way again, where actually a lot of junior drivers are very, very good. They're just not really given a chance to showcase themselves. Mm. Of course, we've had all these rumours. I don't know if it's confirmed or not yet. But at the end of the season, there's going to be, after Abu Dhabi, a 10-car rookie race.
I saw that. That would be insane.
Which would be a good fun watch as well. Hopefully, obviously, we'll get to see that. But yeah, Colin Pinto making it into Q3. And after we gave Sargeant so much stick about the fact he never out-qualified Alex Albon in a legitimate qualifying session. Admittedly, it comes with an asterisk alongside it, but Colin Pinto has done it in just 2 attempts.
Yes, yeah, Albon left the garage with an airbox cooler still attached, which was a bit of a shame for him, because he probably would have out-qualified Colin Pinto, but
and
even
Alonso.
So... Yeah, Albon was looking on it, wasn't he? But yeah, 2 Williams in Q3, and an Aston Martin, and... the rest of who you'd expect apart from Lando Norris. And yeah, Q3 was pretty much as you would have expected based on the first 2 sessions, wasn't it? Charles Leclerc was looking on it and made it 4 pole positions in a row in Baku. He is like becoming the Ayrton Senna of Baku in Monaco. Because how many... Well, I guess Senna actually got wins rather than just poles. But
Senna, like 300 laps in a row at Monaco, but there we are.
Yeah, Leclerc got, obviously, 21, 2, 3, and 4 now. All pole positions. Still yet to win a race. Spoilers, he didn't win this one either. From Oscar Piastri, P2. Carlos Sainz. The Ferrari is probably the fastest qualifying car. McLaren and Ferrari pretty even, weren't they, actually? And Sergio Perez, the king of Baku, out-qualifying Max Verstappen for the first time in a year and a half. He qualified 4th and 6th, with Russell splitting them. Verstappen just looked off it. I don't know what's up with him at the minute.
He doesn't get on very well at Baku, for the most part.
No, he doesn't.
It's a weak
really
track
doesn't.
For him.
No, Singapore is a pretty good track, as much as the myth is that he's never actually won there. Which
it
is true. It's
up
still
and down
true.
For him. Yeah, no, he's. I think one of the only tracks left on the calendar he hasn't won at.
Probably is the only one, because he won
pretty
all
much every race in the second
races
half of last
year.
Season. Yeah, it's gotta be. Is it the only track? Because
well, Perez won what? Saudi
and Baku.
Miami. No, not
no,
Miami.
Baku,
Saudi and Baku.
Yeah. So Max has won Baku. He's won in
and
Saudi.
And he's won Saudi Arabia. Yeah,
it's
the only one.
Singapore is the only track.
Oh, excuse the only me. Track that Matt's voice can't pronounce either. So
exactly, yeah. The only track on the current calendar that Verstappen hasn't won at, and that's a pretty insane stat, isn't it? Which, of course, obviously we'll make our predictions later on for the Singapore Grand Prix, whether that's set to continue or not this weekend. But as we move into the Grand Prix, though, Jamie, obviously in previous years, it's often been Monza that, or Spa that have been the tracks to people take a lot of penalties and start from the pit lane and do all this, that and the other. This year it seems to be Baku, wasn't it? I can't remember the last time 2 drivers started the Grand Prix from the pit lane, but it was Hamilton and I believe Ocon, but I could be wrong and it might have been Gasly after he was disqualified.
It was one of them.
Either way, it didn't
matter because
Alpine did nothing.
I was confused why Hamilton started from the pits.
Because he had to change the engine after qualifying.
He had to, or did they just choose to?
No, he had to. They rebuilt the car wrong apparently after Friday, hence why it was slow on Saturday anyway. They had to break Barc Fermé anyway. So they were basically we're going to be starting at the back anyway. We may as well just do this.
Might as well put a new engine in. Fair enough. And he did qualify last out of the proper teams anyway, apart from Norris. So race starts. Charles Leclerc leads away for the 4th year in a row and keeps the lead into turn 1. Perez gets ahead of Carlos Sainz and Verstappen got ahead of George Russell, and suddenly it looks like Red Bull could be a bit serious here, since they're 3rd and 5th now with hopefully better race pace than they had in qualifying. Other things that happen on lap 1, classically these two always, maybe I'm making it up, but Stroll and Tsunoda always just seem to crash into each other.
I think they often find each other close on the road.
And I think
it's a combination of Yuki. Well, actually, to be fair, Yuki wasn't the aggressor in this one. Stroll just kind of lazily kept the car at the inside. And it's Lance Stroll, isn't it? That's why he did it. But it kind of just, as you said, it was a Yuki and Lance kind of crash, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Of a bit of a lack of awareness and a refusal to kind of back out of it from either of them.
Yeah.
And he ultimately screwed them both.
Yeah, it was pretty avoidable. And Snowden was out straight away. And Stroll was, well, his pace was compromised. They said it wasn't to do with the crash, but then it probably was.
It's probably due to what's driving the car, to be honest. But we'd explain our lack of pace, but there we are.
Yes, but at least they've got Adrian Newey next year, so could be worse.
He's still going to have to try and get Lance Stroll to do something.
Hey, he's got as many pole positions as... who's got one pole?
Hulkenberg?
Nico Hulkenberg. Yep.
That's not that impressive.
For a while, it was Lando Norris. That's not true anymore by a long way, is it?
No, not anymore. Not anymore.
Yeah, that is a shame. First half of the race, or first stint of the race, was pretty unremarkable, really. They were kind of just spread out a bit. Piastri was holding off Perez, who was in third. And Norris was just making his way through. He was up to about eighth, I want to say, because obviously the front straight at Baku is just a pure motorway.
It is literally a motorway, yeah.
Yeah, well, Jenson Button's described it as that when he was driving a McHonda, which must have not been very fun when you're going 20k an hour slower than everything else. But Norris, yeah, was just overtaking cars at will. And that was kind of it for the first stint. And eventually, Sergio Perez pit from P3 to try and execute the undercut. But McLaren actually used some good papaya rules. And fair play, because this is a Red Bull move or a Mercedes move. And McLaren actually did very clever by telling Norris to basically slow up Perez and make sure he couldn't undercut Piastri. And if not for that, I think Piastri probably would have been undercut. I don't know about you, but it seemed like Perez
it would have been
pace.
Incredibly close had he not been had Perez been able to pull that move off. Of course, he was helped a bit because he had all the slipstream back down towards turn one and pulled off the move anyway. But yeah, it certainly gave Oscar a bit more breathing room, which obviously allowed him then to get right up to the back of Charles Leclerc, because Ferrari and Leclerc, they kind of had a bit of a nightmare throughout the entire pit stop window. Their in lap was slow, the pit stop was not great, and the out lap was not brilliant either. So Oscar Piastri had pretty much taken 6 seconds out of Leclerc in the space of about two laps. And certainly, yeah, the heat was on.
Yes, definitely. And once Piastri got in that DRS, you could kind of tell he wasn't going to let it go very easily. But fair play to McLaren, because all of that came about because they were proactive in keeping Norris in the way of Perez. So, yeah, credit where credit's due. But that left us with an insane spectacle for the rest of the race, really, wasn't it? Because you had Leclerc winning, Piastri, who had found some pace on these white-walled hards, and Sainz and Perez, I think, did... No, Perez
was still ahead of Sainz, yeah.
You just had this kind of battle closing in. Started off with the top two, and then eventually the third and fourth place cars were coming back at them as well. And it was all set to be a very entertaining second half of the race.
Well, it's a very, very odd one, isn't it? Because the race itself was absolutely incredible. We cannot, you know, kind of stress that enough. But there's not really a lot to talk about with a huge chunk of it still. Because obviously lap 20, Oscar Piastri made a brilliant move down the inside of Leclerc.
Oh,
completely caught him napping in towards turn one. And it was judged to perfection. He said after the race, when he went for the move, he was like, this is 50-50, whether I hit the wall or not. But got it stopped, pulled off the move. But then it kind of meant, obviously, that, like we said, but by the end of the Grand Prix, you had four cars covered by just over a second. But Leclerc just simply could not find a way back past him. So it was very intense.
It was very intense, the race.
It was brilliant, although it probably won't look like it, or we can't really explain it and kind of do it
justice. Well, it's just because there was always the jeopardy of, like, will Leclerc come back?
Exactly.
But in the end, the answer was no. But if you think about movies, I'll use this analogy. Something like, you can have an intense, something like A Quiet Place, if you've seen it, it's very, very intense. But it's only intense because the tension is so high throughout. Whereas something like an action thriller is not that intense at certain points, but there's just always stuff going on. That was off topic, but there you go. Hopefully
it was a good analogy.
Why it was good.
It was a good analogy. And we would recommend going back and watching the race if you haven't, because
A Quiet Place, brilliant. Very good film.
I've never seen it. I could not tell you what it's about. I know nothing. I've heard about it, but I know nothing.
Jim from The Office is in it as well.
Fair enough. but of course, yeah, we did, you know, we say about that, and it was obviously very, very close at the front. We still had, obviously, Lando Norris, who was basically trying to take his hard tyres as far as he possibly could to go for the alternate strategy. So he was kind of giving us something else interesting to watch whilst this was all going on. And by lap 38, just 13 laps to go, he did finally pit. And I don't think any of us would have thought this would have happened at the start of the race. But he did end up beating Verstappen still, which obviously is quite pivotal for the championship challenge. But it all then, as we got into all those final few laps, wasn't it? It was that quintessential, there's a battle for the win. Probably the best recent example I can give it was Singapore last year. And you're going, Leclerc's involved in this, or George Russell in that case. Something's going to go wrong soon. And with two laps to go, it finally did, didn't it, Jamie? There's only so much shaking of the bottle you can do before the lid flies off.
Yes, yeah. Piastri had kind of gaps the next pack of cars. Leclerc was still running second from Perez, from Sainz, and then there's a bit of a gap to Russell, and another bit of a gap to where Norris was just pulling away from Verstappen. And yeah, Perez goes for a very good move into turn one, I thought. And he almost pulled it off, but sadly for him, didn't. This is the penultimate lap, the start of lap 50 for those guys out of 51. And Carlos Sainz, the opportunistic, smooth operator that he is, just thinks, you know what, there's a podium here. I'm going to go for it. And he does go for it. And goes down the inside of Sergio Perez. And he almost has a look at Leclerc as well, doesn't he, for a second. But that compromises
him. Leclerc's tyres at this point are completely shot, aren't they? He's yeah, just which shredded is odd, through them more than everyone else.
He's a bit of a tyre whisperer. So.
Well, he can be. He seems to be able to control it at the front. But as soon as he's under pressure, we saw him so many times, didn't we, lighting up the tyres and things like that.
Oh, that slide shot.
Those two action shots are brilliant.
Unbelievable.
Brilliant.
yes.
Yeah, obviously
yeah,
signs
but the
then...
signs... Go ahead.
Go on, talk to me. Help talk me through it, Jamie.
Okay, nice. Well, Carlos Sainz is compromised on the exit of turn two. And Sergio Perez is like, right, I'm not having the both Ferraris beat me here. And goes back down the inside on the exit of turn two, out tractions. Sainz are still ahead by about half a car length, but they are definitely, most definitely alongside. Perez's right front is alongside Carlos Sainz's left side pod. And then Sainz just edges and edges left to try and keep Leclerc's slipstream, basically. He's taking the normal racing line somewhere a little bit between the two cars. And Sainz doesn't expect Perez to hold his ground. He thinks Perez will move to the left as well. And simply Perez doesn't. And they're both in the wall. At a full concrete wall. So it was, yeah, very... would have been quite a painful one for both drivers. But not only losing the podium, but also the physical impact. And that was both of them out of the race. And I really felt sorry for Perez this, because I don't put it on his door at all.
Interesting. You're saying this is Sainz's fault, are you?
I think it's one of those where Perez could have avoided it, but he didn't. He doesn't need to jump out of the way. And
no,
it's more on
that.
Sainz than Perez.
Interesting, because this has been obviously raging on Twitter over the last couple of days, hasn't it? I've seen so many hilarious tweets about this, because some people don't understand
physics.
Kind of how physics work and racing lines and things. I can understand, obviously, what you're saying. I think you've got to remember as well, obviously, out of turn two, the circuit does slightly bank
very,
to the left
slightly,
anyway,
yeah.
doesn't it? So, obviously, if Sainz kept driving straight, he was going to be putting himself in a wall at some point quite soon. As you said, obviously, Perez did have a lot of room to manoeuvre to his left as well.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, for me, I don't think I've seen a more kind of generic example of a racing incident in quite a while. I personally don't think you could really blame anybody for that. It was just two cars battling, a slight miscommunication. As you're picking up speed off of a corner like that, it's going to just go wrong in an instant, and it did. And yeah, for me, it was racing incident. And of course, it did mean that George Russell, despite probably not seeing him since about lap two, for the second time this year, he's going to capitalise, gain two places in the dying stages of a Grand Prix, and claim a trophy he didn't deserve, which is odd that it's happened twice.
Well, yeah, I guess it makes up for the one he got disqualified from.
I'm sure he doesn't feel that way.
No, probably not. Probably not at all. But yeah, I would put this more at Sainz than Perez. But I really felt sorry for Perez because it's easily his strongest race of the season.
Oh, hilarious, isn't it?
And it's very sad for him. Yeah.
The one time. I mean, on the other hand, that probably does now mean his seat's safe to the end of the year. And if he can get another good result in Singapore, because that's another track he has been good at in recent years, you know, that's just locked up for him.
That Red Bull are serious again, because the race pace Perez showed was pretty good, and Verstappen just had an off day, I think, in Baku, because he's not a very good driver at Baku. So,
yeah. Verstappen's not particularly good at street circuits. I'm going to go ahead and say it. He's not. He's nowhere near as good.
It's
as
not
he
his
is
strength.
At tracks.
No, well, he's better at traditional circuits.
The problem for Verstappen, I think, with street circuits is, of course, to find the limit for him. He likes to go over the limit. You can't do that at street circuits. So you always get the sense watching him drive at a Baku or a Monaco or something like that. That 9 times out of 10, you kind of just get the sense that he's aware. He's almost hyper aware of the fact he's
within
not
himself,
confident
yeah.
of it. Which, obviously, yeah. in some street circuits now, doesn't cost you much. Like I said, at tracks like Baku or, you know, potentially Singapore as well in recent years, or Monaco, it does often mean, yeah, that he does tend to struggle. And he kind of, you know, for someone like, you know, it's the perfect storm for Perez, because he kind of excels the other way.
He's better at street circuits than any other circuit.
Exactly. Yeah. It kind of gives him a chance then to suddenly remind Red Bull why they've hired him. Admittedly not particularly useful when it's 3 races out of 24
and because you've now
had a crash with Sainz, you've gone and lost the constructors to McLaren for the first time since 2014.
That Sergio Perez at the last 2 Monaco Grand Prix hasn't scored points.
So I think 2023, no he didn't, did he? Yeah, you're correct.
So, yeah.
Because, again, he's built up too much confidence.
Strength.
Yeah, he's built up too much confidence at street circuits.
Yeah, exactly.
Jamie, I'm going to segue there quickly, because that brings us to our quiz of the day.
Okay, here we go.
So, when was the last time McLaren Mercedes led the Constructors' Championship?
I saw this on a tweet. After Australia 2014.
Bingo! People always forget that they did lead after the first race of the turbo hybrid era. Exactly. Well, you've already given me two of the answers then. Your goal today, Jamie, is to give me the top 10 point scorers
back
from
to
that
back
2014.
2014 quizzes. Or
exactly.
Was it 2016? No, it was 2016 last week, wasn't it?
2014 quiz today. If you get one wrong, it's all over. You've already given me two. You've got eight more to go.
So, Nico Rosberg won the race for Mercedes.
He did.
Ricciardo got disqualified. This is not him.
Nope.
Kevin Magnussen, P2. Yep. Jenson Button, P3.
Yep.
Now.
Now.
So, Hamilton DNF'd.
Yep.
Just ruling out drivers. 2014. Okay, so you've got the Williams are probably around there somewhere. The Force Indias. Who else was good? Not the Lotuses, because they had the fork nose and it was awful. Vettel didn't. He didn't finish either. Ferrari were probably good. I'll go Fernando Alonso.
Correct.
Nico Hülkenberg.
Correct.
Sergio Perez?
Correct.
That was risky. Hulk's great at Australia. I didn't know Perez was. It's the first race of hybrid era. I'm pretty sure not many people finished.
Well, most teams couldn't get through winter testing. Never mind a Grand Prix.
How many am I on?
You've got 1, 2, 3, 4,
I guess five,
six so far.
Okay. The Toro Rossos might have been around there somewhere as well. I think... No, I'll play it safe first. Felipe Massa.
Incorrect!
Really? What happened to him?
Oh, you're going to remember this instantly as soon as I tell you. If I say Kamui Kobayashi...
Kobayashi peeled off half his car crashing into Massa, didn't he?
He did.
Right, well, Bottas...
I said if you get one wrong.
I'm going to get them right anyway.
Okay.
Bottas
you've got six. Yep, that's two more, but you're not having them.
Verne.
Yeah, that's 9.
And Raikkonen.
Correct.
Great. Massa screwed me. Why was he the first one I went for?
Well, Kobayashi technically screwed you, but yeah.
Yeah, true.
Who
Kobayashi actually might have got points that race if he hadn't just rear-ended Massa.
Yeah, he wouldn't have. You still had the Saubers that were, I mean, they weren't great that year, but they were still better than, actually, they weren't really better than Marussia.
No, they weren't.
Were they?
Because Kobayashi was racing Massa for position. Like, it was lap one, wasn't it?
Or it was two, turn one. And it was Massa locked up both fronts and just went straight on. I think Massa had just had a bad... Massa was 9th on the grid. Kobayashi, to be fair to me, was 14th on the grid.
Yeah.
How on earth did he manage that? What happened in that qualifying session?
It was wet, wasn't it? It was
wet.
Mental.
No, Kobayashi Q1 was dry. Q2 was wet. What happened? So he out-qualified Chilton, Bianchi, Gutierrez, Ericsson, and yeah... Grosjean and Maldonado. There must
and
be
Perez and Bottas. My word, how do you manage that?
Yeah, wild. Absolutely wild. Maybe
Bottas had a grid penalty.
Yeah, maybe Kamui Kobayashi could have scored Caterham their only ever points in Formula 1 had he not decided to ram Felipe Massa
in
off
turn
the bottom
one.
Into turn 1. And never forget, of course, obviously the 2014 cars, famous always for their sexually front
having
wings
sex
as well.
On the front.
Exactly. But anyway, we'll bring it back to 2024 then, Jamie. Obviously, Oscar Piastri, second win of the year. After a week after, obviously, McLaren have said they're going to be playing a number one driver, Oscar Piastri went, yeah, I'm your number one, boys. Thank you
very
much. Not
bad for number two driver in reference to his manager.
I really wanted him to say that at the end of the race. I honestly thought he would as well. Leclerc, again, another pole, another non-win, and 4 now in a row at Baku without taking the win. George Russell with the most deserved podium we're ever going to see. Norris ahead of Verstappen. Alonso, Williams get a double points finish. I love that.
10 points.
10 points
Williams.
To Williams. They scored the same amount as Red Bull this weekend. Fun fact. With
and
Alonso,
they scored more than the rest of the season combined.
They have.
They're
up
to 16 now.
Which, to be fair, Sauber could do that by finishing 10th somewhere, which would be quite
they
helpful
could.
For them.
They could.
But yeah, Albon beats out Colapinto with Hamilton and Behrman running out the top 10 because Hülkenberg, and it is hilarious, got absolutely screwed over, didn't he, at
yes,
the end of that?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And he was ahead of Colapinto, behind Albon, so it was on for a P8.
Yep.
He was right behind the crash, the Perez-Sainz crash, when it happened. He ran over a bit of debris, thought he had a puncture because it was quite a big hit on the debris, so he backed off thinking he had a puncture. He then didn't have a puncture, but in backing off, Colapinto had got down his inside. And then, because it was yellow flags in that section of track, he saw the yellow box on the marshal post. And then just as he drove underneath it, probably too late, it went green. And everyone behind him saw it went green. He didn't. And then both Hamilton and Behrman overtook him. So he went from P8 to P11. I'm just thinking, the amount of times, think Australia 2023, they saw one car in the wall and immediately safety carred it because Fernando Alonso would have cried about it if not.
Yep.
Had they waited for a safety car in Australia, Hülkenberg would have had a podium because Stroll just drove off the track.
Yep.
And they red flagged it pretty much straight away.
Yep.
Here, they've got two of the front runners who were live pictured in the wall. And they've managed to wait 20 seconds before putting a safety car.
It was over a minute. It was over a minute from the time they hit the wall to when the virtual safety car was deployed. The only thing funnier than Hülkenberg getting screwed over by this was the fact that just as this crash happened, Verstappen pit to try and get fastest
lap. Oh, so annoying.
Luckily, obviously, for his sake anyway, didn't lose any places because of it or anything. But that would have been hilarious at the end of the race as well.
Yeah, so but Norris got the fastest lap point,
which
Verstappen would have had, so that's basically a 2-point swing right there.
Yep. Well, not necessarily, but highly likely that Verstappen would have had.
And also, what's the difference between, I guess it's nothing to do with safety car, Norris would have finished 5th versus 6th.
Yeah, no point swing in terms of that either, because obviously
no,
it's
it was
12, 10, 8.
6th to 7th.
No, it wasn't. It was
2 points.
Oh, yes. Yeah, but it's still 2 points, isn't it? Between
still 2 points.
4th and 5th,
fourth
so there was
fifth.
No
okay.
swing there.
No. Just the 2 points safety car. It's just the fastest lap point swing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But Ollie Bearman becomes the first ever driver to get his first 2 points finished, score points in his first two Grand Prix for different teams.
Which
is a useless stat.
No, I think that's brilliant. And it staggers me that no one did that in the 1950s. You would have thought, even if that was to show up to the Indy 500 or something 2 years in a row and get points. But apparently not.
Yeah, well, you should do some research and fact check that fact.
No, it is correct. They had it on all the F1 media as well.
F1 is never wrong. So
no,
that
exactly.
Makes sense.
Exactly. Fun fact, F1 24 is wrong, Jamie. They've brought out the F2 cars this week. And you can now do an F2 2024 campaign with them, except for they've not included Qatar in the calendar
right.
for some reason. So you've lost a round for some reason.
Interesting. Speaking of F2, your man, Nicholas Coulin. Is that his name?
Niels Coulin.
Niels.
You're thinking of Latifi.
Well, I mean, yeah. Do you want to tell us about him real quick?
Since oh, he's gone. It's over. Which, to be fair, he had only agreed a 2-race weekend deal with AIX, but I'm still
so he's
got
not been
to see
sacked.
It
he's just been.
But he has
go.
Been, because I'm sure there was an area in his contract that says if you're not completely shocking, then we'll keep you in the car for the rest of the year. Because obviously, for F2 teams, it's just easy money to have the son of the CEO of Booking.com in your car.
Yes, exactly. He'll be booking
he's
a holiday now. He's got no drive. So
no, he'll be off to IndyCar, I bet. He just moves up series whenever he gets.
Not score dropped. Any points in that as well.
Exactly.
It's astonishing he's never scored a point in anything.
No, he did in IndyCar in their F2 series. But you do get points just for showing up.
You could do a better job.
I think...
We said that
2 weeks ago. I genuinely think, give me a weekend in an F2.
You wouldn't do any worse, put it that way.
I reckon I could get within 6 seconds of pole. He was further off pole in Baku than Mahave Raghunathan was a couple of years ago. Or a few years ago now.
I do think the physicality, you wouldn't even be able to do a lap in an F2 car.
I think I'd be okay. I don't think you give me enough credit. I'm
really?
A very strong man.
Okay. But Borthaletto took the championship lead. Get him in the Audi. Actually, don't. Get Colapinto Pinto in the Audi. That's my new conspiracy.
I thought you wanted Joe in the Audi. Have you given
Joe's
up
not
on
happening.
Joe?
I've given up.
Have you genuinely given up now with Joe?
There's
is
no
it
chance Joe gets
is it,
to see
is it
anyway.
Jova, Jamie, would you say?
It's Jova. It is. It is. But yeah, I would love to see Colapinto on the grid. And Lawson. Lawson to Toro Rosso. Been off Ricciardo.
Yep, that's apparently going to be announced later this week. So we'll do that quickly, as we always do on the show.
Yep.
Jamie, big news coming into Singapore. Liam Lawson hasn't been maybe signed or not signed to VCarb. He has definitely not been.
Helmut Marko has probably said something racist.
Probably.
That is one thing you can always bank on.
Well, yeah,
and,
we'll get that one in there.
Yeah. Well done, Liam Lawson. Or not well done, and keep trying.
Exactly. Good job, or not, maybe. Yes, no. So Lawson apparently is going to be replacing Ricciardo. So if you had to guess then, Jamie, Audi, if Lawson's got that V-carb seat, which
there's
he does,
so many
doesn't,
options, it's a joke.
You've got, well, I think you're really down to three, aren't you? Because obviously McLaren are trying to put Bortoletto in.
Yeah.
You've obviously got Bottas, who apparently is trying to sweet talk Mattia Binotto as well. Or you've got Colapinto. Who do you sign for next year?
I want them to go Bortoletto. I think they'll go Bottas.
Interesting. You don't think Colapinto's got a shot?
I don't think I don't think Williams got the power to put a driver of theirs in a rival team's seat, if you get what I mean.
I just think Audi are interested in having who they can have. And, you know, for someone like Colapinto as well, you kind of think, you look at that Sauber this year, it's been complete dog poo. You're kind of going...
But you're not on the grid next year.
If you're not going to be on the grid next year, it's better, you know, for most of the other drivers they've tried to get, unless you're Hulkenberg and you're just chasing the money, it's basically...
I'm Mick Schumacher, although he won't get it.
He won't get it. He doesn't deserve to get it either.
The other thing, the thing is with Colapinto... I listened to a podcast with Julian Palmer, which I'd recommend.
We always love Julian.
Palmer basically said, if you're a driver, you want to go against the most overrated driver on the grid.
Yep.
Because you look like a king.
Yep.
And if you go against the most underrated driver on the grid, it's a career finisher, basically.
Yep.
And he was talking about Nico Hülkenberg being the most underrated driver on the grid. So I
really?
Genuinely think for Colapinto, it's probably better to stay on the sidelines at Williams Reserve for a year than it is to go to Audi, get battered by Hülkenberg, and then not be on the grid again.
Hang on a minute. Say Behrman signs just slapped Albon. Him last weekend. Just make sure every race next year is a Baku.
Every race is Baku.
Be easily slapped.
If Colapinto stays on the sidelines at Williams, if Albon or Sainz gets a drive anywhere else for 26, which is fairly likely, then Colapinto will be straight back in at Williams. I wonder if that's a better long-term move for him.
No, you've just got to take an opportunity in an F1 car when you can, because we know full well he's going to be off to IndyCar pretty soon.
Yeah. But
he
I hope they go to
Bortoletto
in Audi.
IndyCar. Sorry?
I hope they go to Bortoletto.
It'd be interesting to see. I think if he wraps up F2, then there's a good shot for it. But obviously, we won't know that until the end of the season.
Next F2 race is in 2.5 months.
Exactly. So. Jamie, we've got a 4-week break after. So actually, no, we can talk about that next week. Ignore me. Predictions recap. What are the scores on the doors coming into this weekend?
You
I can't help but feel I got
me.
Screwed.
61-53. 8 points in it to you.
8 point margin. We love it. We absolutely love it.
I've done a little bit all right here, you know.
I think, yeah, you've done right because you took the predictions I wanted to do.
I took Charles Leclerc on pole. So that's a little plus two.
2 points, Jamie, for the most obvious call in the world.
Lando Norris to win.
No points.
Didn't happen. If Ocon wasn't in a yellow flag zone, then that might have got
probably was going to happen, yeah. But Jamie,
Piastri,
was. P2. 1 point.
So that's 1 point. And Charles Leclerc P3. That's another point.
So you did get Leclerc bottling the win from pole.
4 points for me.
4 points to Jamie 183. So I'm still ahead of you no matter what I do here. But yeah, yes. I'm pretty certain I had a stinker, didn't I?
You got Lando Norris on pole. Incorrect. He was out in Q1. What a clown.
Yep.
Charles Leclerc to win.
1 point.
1 point. Lando Norris P2.
No points.
And Lewis Hamilton.
After Friday, that looked like a good call.
So, no points there either.
Well, 1 point
so,
overall.
Oh, 1 point, sorry. So, yeah, I got four, you got one. Gap's down to five, let's go.
Oh, that's a much better shot for you. With just a handful of races to go. Driver of the day, who are we going to say, Jamie? There's a few
shout-outs. To Colapinto.
Shout-outs to
also,
both Williams drivers, I think.
Shout-out to Alonso, I think. He
really?
He did pretty well.
Apart from Hamilton, who started from the pit lane, who did Alonso beat this weekend that he shouldn't have?
I don't know if the Aston was that much quicker than the Williams. But
it
was
quicker
than
the Williams.
Colapinto.
Exactly. He finished exactly where he should have done based on the circumstance.
Fair enough. I will obviously go for Oscar Piastri.
I think Oscar Piastri probably deserves it. Like we said, I think Albon deserves a shout-out, so does Colapinto. Am I right in saying now with that result? Let me just double-check this. But I believe Valtteri Bottas is now 22nd in a 20-driver championship, which is true.
Yeah, he will be.
Yep.
Because Colapinto got ahead of him.
Still
well,
behind Sargent. No. Colapinto, he might have already had the result, didn't he, last time?
Yeah, Colapinto got the result last week.
Fair enough. Well, he's definitely 22nd
Bottas' best is 13th.
Dear me, that's so painful. Even Zhou Guanyu is now 20th and not last in a 20-car championship, which is quite incredible.
And yet he's still getting dropped. What a joke. race
what
rating.
A joke.
What a joke. Great one. It's a yoke. Baku, what are we rating it?
I'm going to say it was, like we said, it weirdly can't hype it enough in this. I'm having to look back at other races we've highly rated. Belgium, I think it was similar to Belgium, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Good tense battle for the win. But I'm going to say, no, you know what? I'm going to say exactly the same as Belgium, an 8.
I was going to say the exact same too. So we're rating it half better than Monza.
Half a point better than Monza. Yeah, I think that's fair. Good weekend overall.
16 out of 20. Would watch again.
Exactly.
Well, would watch for the first time in my case.
Yeah. Singapore, Jamie. We've had a couple of interesting bits coming up. We're going to do our quick Singapore preview show right now as well. It's got 4 DRS zones this year, which is mad.
It has.
But it's going to rain all weekend, so that's going to be irrelevant.
Yeah, I'm excited for a Singapore wet race because last time that happened, Hülkenberg nearly got a podium and then ran out of air. So
no.
Yeah.
Not the last time it happened.
When was it since?
2022.
Really?
Yeah, was it 2022 or last year when Hamilton and Verstappen both bottled it?
Oh, yeah, that was 22. Yeah.
Yeah.
When Perez won somehow. Yeah.
Because he didn't
last year was
it.
Full dry.
Yeah. But George Russell still bottled it.
Yeah, just to remind everyone, Russell did hit the wall on the last lap. When he
so did Lando, to be fair. But just Russell
yeah, but
hit
it a lot less. what were we saying? Singapore, what am I typing in? Singapore weather. Oh, yeah. We might even get a race with that weather.
it's looking wet this weekend. Wet and wild is. In Singapore. So you're predicting no one.
Pole position will be Bernd Mailander.
Fair enough. I like that at all.
No. Did we have a safety car? Or was it a virtual?
Virtual safety car, but it does count.
It does count, so that's a 6-race streak over.
Yeah.
So pole position will go to... Do I just go full hopium, or do I be normal?
Go on, go hopium.
I'll go Lando Norris on pole.
Oh, that's so, not hopium, Jamie, you fraud.
It's not at all. I will go... Why not? Max Verstappen's going to end his gold drought.
Really? He's going to finally win in Singapore.
He is. He's going to tick them all off. It's bingo. I'll go... I want Norris to have a bad race. I'm just going to start thinking it's going to happen.
Are you I'll still worried about Norris?
Second. I am very worried about Norris. I've said this many times.
I know,
yeah,
but...
The gap is coming down. We need
but he's got to average 8.6 points a weekend. Do you know how many times Norris has taken more than 8 points out of Verstappen this year?
Like, once?
Once. Do you know where that was?
Monza?
No, Australia, when Max didn't finish. Oh, yeah.
Seriously, he really should be taking at least 7 points a race out of him.
Well, it's the only time he's taken more than 8 is the critical thing there. He's taken 8 out of him a couple of times, yeah.
Okay, where was I? Norris on pole, Verstappen P1, Piastri P2, and Lewis Hamilton.
Really?
That is pure vibes.
That is incredible, and I love it. Right, I'm going to have to go different then, aren't I? I'm going to say Charles Leclerc pole. Mm-hmm. We're gonna say another Leclerc pole, but we're gonna say another Lando Norris win. I'm gonna say Leclerc P2, Oscar Piastri P3. My plan by the end of the season is to manifest it so Verstappen finishes third.
Yeah, Leclerc.
Despite the fact Leclerc needs to take 10 points out of him a race, I believe. Which, to be fair, isn't impossible when we got
He's
three sprints as well.
Form recently. The thing with that McLaren versus Red Bull at the minute. Norris should be finishing 2 or 3 positions ahead of Verstappen every single week.
Exactly. But it's just doing it at the front, isn't it?
Yeah, this will be like Vettel's 2009.
Can we, again, I know we spoke about this a few weeks ago, but quickly mention, even if Leclerc had done fairly well in those 4 races halfway through the season, he'd be like 40 points off Max now. And you
well
would genuinely
Norris, yeah.
tip him to be world champion this year. It's incredible how badly Ferrari have screwed him over.
Those 4 races were, yeah... pretty awful.
Fun fact as well, with that DNF, Perez is officially down to 8th place in the championship.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I saw that.
That's quite good going.
Still not a winner, so 7 race wins.
Yep.
Across the board, and none for Sergio Perez.
Yep. Only 1 for Sainz and George Russell, and 2 for Lewis Hamilton, Oscar Piastri, Charles Leclerc, Lando Norris, and of course 7 still for Max Verstappen.
But none in the last 7 races, since he held up a Leeds United shirt.
This is what I was going to ask you as well. I don't know whether there's a stat for this or anything. But if Verstappen wins this world title without winning any more Grand Prix, surely he is going to smash the record for winning a world title whilst not winning the most, or without winning the most amount of races in the season. Because I would assume that's probably still held by Keke Rosberg when it was
what
like a 15 race. So winning the world title... whilst losing the most races in a season.
Oh, so yeah. So Verstappen would have not won. Say he doesn't
so,
win
yeah,
a race.
So yeah, how many... Yeah, wins the world title, not winning the most races.
With the lowest win percentage, basically, you're saying.
Not win percentage.
Oh, no, just numbers.
Because you would have thought... Yeah, because like Hamilton won with like 5 wins, didn't he, in 2008 and things.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what... I'm trying to work out the right way to word that.
So 24 races.
He would
have
not
lost
won 17.
17.
Yeah.
Surely no one's lost more races than that.
Well, you think there's
the
only
title.
Been more than 17 races in like the last 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And Rosberg won while losing 12 races, I want to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Hamilton won the most
Hamilton
races
won 10, Verstappen and Ricciardo each won 1.
Hmm.
I would assume... Is that already the record or has Keke still got that? I would assume.
It depends 1982. How many races were in 1982, I guess.
Yeah, let's have a look quickly. I would have thought it was. Oh, so that was 16? Really? Is it 16? It was a 16 race season.
Wow.
And Keke Rosberg
won one.
Did win one. So Verstappen's got to win two more races between now and the end of the year.
Yeah.
To break that record. Yeah, Keke Rosberg. That, I mean, 1982 was. Consider it 16 race season. And what was it? 9 points for a win then. To win the world title with 44 points is. well, terrible, wasn't it, based on the season they had? Because obviously everything that did happen over the course of the campaign. But is just absolute insanity. 1982 still is the most insane season of all time.
Unserious season of all time.
Oh, easily. Easily. Well, you probably know it was unserious when 1, 2, 3, 4 Frenchmen finished inside the top 7. That should tell you everything you need to know.
There we go. We should stop rambling.
We've done a good ramble.
Get on with
today.
Their days.
Yes. Thank you, everybody, as always, so much for listening. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure you drop a sub, drop a follow, drop a like, all that good stuff. Greatly, greatly appreciated. And Jamie and I will return then next week out for the Singapore Grand Prix review.
Max Verstappen won the race. Spoiler.